Good morning and welcome to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestinian Canadian radio show. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM from Montreal, and the hour is 11. We'll be with you till noon as usual. Today is Thursday, December 1st, and we have a very important show for you lined up today. We have an interview with Phyllis Binnis, who works at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington. She's also the coordinator of the United Nations Committee of NGOs working on Palestine. Our Montreal Collective member, Sabine Friesinger, interviewed her regarding the International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinian People. That is something that we all have to celebrate. So we send our best wishes to the Palestinian community here, and we say to them, may you awaken to a homeland, as Mahmoud Darwish would say. We also have an audio montage of voices from the Palestinian community and supporters of the Palestinian community at Concordia and UCAM universities regarding the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People. But before we go into our show, I would like to announce two important events happening today. First, we have a demonstration that is starting right now as we are speaking. A picket in solidarity with the Palestinian refugees facing deportation, stateless and deported. Today, December 1st, starting at 11 right now and going until 1 p.m. in front of Citizenship and Immigration Canada at 715 Peel Street, corner of Saint-Antoine. That's south of René-Lévesque and on Metro Bonaventure. During the past month, three more Palestinian refugees have been deported from Montreal back to the occupied territories and the refugee camps in Lebanon. Please show your solidarity with these refugees as they are trying to have a normal life. You can contact the Refugee Coalition at refugees@riseup.net. That's refugees@riseup.net. Or you can call them at 514-859-9070. The other event, something that has been going in UCAM for the past 2 days, is a photography exhibition for Darren L., Montreal photographer. This event is being held by SBHR, PAJU, Duperg, McGill, and Concordia. And this event is called Twice Removed. It's happening at the G.A. DeSev Auditorium on 320 St. Catherine East, and it's been happening since Tuesday, the 29th. Today is the last day you should catch this exhibition and go and look at the photography there. This is the last day, it's going from 10 till 5. Montreal photographer Darren L. has traveled throughout Palestine in 2002-2003. His photographs address the impact of the Israeli occupation, which, despite all laws, has entered its 38th year. The title of the exhibition, Twice Removed, refers to a very important reality. As in 48 and 67, Palestinians are being removed from their homes and their land. Again, the exhibition, this is their last day. It's called Twice Removed. It's happening at J.A. DeSev Auditorium. The address is 320 St. Catherine East, Metro Berry-UQAM, and that's in University of Quebec at Montreal. And it's going to go on today, the last day, till 5 o'clock. And for the demonstration, again, we repeat, it's happening now. Go ahead and join them. It is happening on the corner of a corner of Peel and San Antoine at the address of 715 Peel in front of the Citizenship and Immigration Canada. We'll move on to our first interview of the day. This interview was recorded, as we said, by Sabine Friesinger. The interview is with Phyllis Binnis, the coordinator of the UN Committee of NGOs working on Palestine. It's in commemoration of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. And here we go. Mm-hmm.
We are speaking today with Phyllis Bennis, who works with the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., specializing in Middle East and United Nations issues. She's also coordinator of the UN Committee of NGOs Working on Palestine and author of the book Before and After U.S. Foreign Policy and the September 11th Crisis, and also recently came out with a new book, Challenging Empire, How People, Governments, and UN Defy U.S. Power. So thank you for joining us today, Phyllis, and welcome to Under the Olive Tree.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Sabine.
Hi. So having a kind of a front row perspective on things, can you tell us a bit about how this idea of setting an international day of action with the Palestinian people came about?
Well, originally, the date is based on the passage of Resolution 181 at the United Nations in 1947, which set the stage for the division of what was then a unified Palestinian territory into what was supposed to be a Jewish state and an Arab state. It was grudgingly supported by the Zionist movement that was fighting for a Jewish state and strongly opposed by Arab governments as well as by the Palestinians, although in fact no one actually consulted the Palestinian population whose land was being left behind. And what happened from that decision, the original plan was to give 55% of the land to the Jewish population, which then amounted to about 30% of the population, and they owned only 6% of the land. But still, the UN called for them to get 55% of the land, 45% to be reserved for a Palestinian Arab state. By the end of the war of 1947-48, Israel, the new state of Israel, contained not 55%, but 78% of historic Palestine, leaving only 22%, what is now the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, only 22% of historic Palestine for what was supposed to become a Palestinian Arab state, which, as we know, never happened. Years later, that date became taken up by the United Nations. It was originally in 1974 when Yasser Arafat was invited to visit the United Nations to speak at the General Assembly. And in the two or three years following that visit, which for the first time put the issue of Palestinian national rights squarely back on the agenda of the United Nations, the General Assembly identified November 29th to be an international day of solidarity with the Palestinian people. And it has been commemorated at the United Nations, at the General Assembly, every year since that time.
Okay, interesting. Now, in your remarks to the UN, you had, on behalf of the NGO network, set out 2 points that you thought should be kind of priorities for the UN to be working on in 2002 when this was kind of proposed. The one was ending the occupation, and two, protecting the Palestinian people. Why did you outline these 2 points as priorities at the time?
Well, the issue of occupation, of course, is what is the primary challenge in looking at the question of Palestine. It's the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, understanding that the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories is what has led to that conflict. So ending the occupation is something that is not only an obligation of Israel, but it's something that's called for in international law. And the United Nations, as the repository of international law, I believe, has an obligation, which it will not meet unless we fight for it, but it has an obligation to see that the occupation is ended. In the meantime, you know, the obligation really of any occupying power is twofold. Number one, to end the occupation. Number two, while you're ending the occupation, you have to be sure to abide by all of the Geneva Conventions that determine the obligations of an occupying power to protect the occupied population, which is everything from food and medical care and education to leisure and recreation. They're all called for in the Geneva Conventions. And, of course, Israel has consistently violated those conventions and does not protect the Palestinian population under occupation. So that second notion, that the United Nations should play the role of protection, comes directly from the understanding that Israel, as the occupying power, is refusing its obligation. And therefore, the international community has a very specific obligation to provide that protection. So what we were calling for is the direct involvement of the United Nations within the Palestinian territories to provide that protection that the Israeli occupying forces do not provide.
Okay. And so what a couple of years into this campaign of solidarity for the Palestinian people, what are some of the actions that are happening across, I guess, the U.S. right now on this day that you know of?
Well, I think one of the most important multifaceted initiatives that's underway now, not only in the U.S., but in Canada and all around the world, is what's known as the BDS campaign for boycotts, divestment, and sanctions. And this campaign, which emerged simultaneously from a meeting of Palestinian NGOs in July of this past summer, and at the same time emerged from a group of UN-sponsored international NGOs working on the question of Palestinian rights. We were meeting in Paris under the auspices of the UN, but to discuss how to create better coordination among various campaigns. And simultaneously, both of those meetings emerged with the call for boycotts, divestment, and sanctions as the most important strategies in this period. Now, what that means is recognizing that in different countries there will be different needs and different possibilities. So in Europe, a number of countries, campaigners are looking at the issue of boycotts, individual boycotts of Israeli goods, primarily goods produced in the settlements. In some places, like the large countries of the Global South, including India, Brazil, and South Africa, the move is to cut those governments' arms trades with Israel, so to stop the governments of Brazil and India from buying Israeli weapons. As to South Africa, which has not reengaged militarily, the goal is to keep the pressure on so that the government in South Africa does not go back to purchasing Israeli weapons. In the United States, the focus has been primarily on the divestment aspect. And here the leadership has really come from the churches, who are way out ahead of the more secular solidarity organizations. Led by the Methodist Church, there has been an investigation of the role that church investments might play in supporting the occupation, and a call for engaging with any of those companies where the Presbyterians have investments with an eye towards persuading them to stop their actions that support occupation, and if they do not, then debating the possibility of divesting from those companies. So it's a very important move, and it's one that's now been taken up by half a dozen other major denominations in the U.S. and Canada. There was, many of your listeners may know, a very important conference on divestment and socially responsible investment simultaneously that was held in Toronto just a couple of weeks ago that brought together a number of both Canadian and U.S. campaigners on this issue. So there's a whole range of activities going on all around the world that are focused on raising the question of how corporations and, in many cases, governments, of course, most particularly the United States government, act in ways that protect and enable the Israeli occupation of Palestine to continue.
Okay. Now, obviously, this is a very controversial campaign, a very controversial initiative. What are the main obstacles in organizing this? What is the reaction of some of the more right-wing and Zionist groups in North America to this campaign?
Well, there's a variety of reactions. I think that one of the very brilliant moves that the Presbyterians took, which is being copied by a number of other campaigns, is that they did not call first for divestment. They're being very careful, very cautious, and trying very hard not to get out ahead of their membership. So, as I mentioned, they called for an investigation of what, if any, investments might be contributing to the occupation. And then they have a several-step plan. The first step to do the investigation. If they find that they are invested in companies which are enabling the occupation, the next step is to engage with the management of that company to persuade them to change their tactics. If it does not work, then they would move to the step towards divestment. So by taking a very careful, incremental approach, they've been able to get out from under the attack that this is just an attack on Israel for no good reason. The other thing is that I think there has been a growing change in public understanding in the United States and Canada as well about the reality of what occupation looks like. Partly, ironically enough, because of the U.S. war in Iraq, where people are now seeing occupation even on their television sets and on the front pages of their newspapers. And they're starting to recognize that these dual occupations, that what the U.S. is calling democratization really in the region looks more like dual occupations, and that there's a lot of links between the occupation of Iraq by the United States and the occupation of the Palestinian territories by Israel. There's a lot of similarities that people here are starting to understand. So the opposition is less than it might be. Certainly there are very strong supporters of Israel. For many, it's a very emotional issue. For others, it's a strategic U.S. national interest kind of issue. And there are numerous challenges. But I think that the attacks that might have been broader from more mainstream forces have not been as strong as we anticipated, because people are handling it in what I think is a very mature and very careful way.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is something called the so-called Gaza disengagement plan. Mm-hmm. How does that affect this campaign? Because some people, think, okay, things are settling down now between Israel and Palestine. There's the conflict is there's some resolution or something. What's the prospect in terms of that? Maybe from your end, looking into it.
Well, unfortunately, I don't share that optimism that the Gaza disengagement is going to lead to some sort of broader peace. The reality is that the Gaza disengagement has not led to an end of occupation, even in Gaza, let alone in the West Bank. What it was a decision by Sharon to give up a very expensive project, which was the settlement project in Gaza, in which about 8,000 settlers lived among 1.5 million Palestinians, with control of about 40% of the land for that tiny population, and more importantly, from the Israeli vantage point, depending on a huge deployment of soldiers, a huge military deployment to protect the Gaza settlers. That pressure was mounting, and in April of 2004, Sharon was able to negotiate a deal to respond to those pressures by withdrawing the settlers and soldiers from the actual territory of Gaza. And in return, what he got from the United States was a set of guarantees from George Bush that, number one, the Gaza withdrawal would be taken as a quid pro quo for the permanent Israeli annexation of huge swaths of much more valuable Palestinian territory in the West Bank, particularly the three major settlement blocks, which, together with the land they claim, amounts to about 40% of the land of the West Bank. So the price that Sharon had to pay to get those guarantees was, in the long run, quite a small price. Gaza was not part of the ideological or religious traditions. It was the hardcore nationalists who demanded never to pull back, but the most hardline religious elements did not see Gaza as part of historic Palestine. So, in fact, the price was relatively low. Even more significantly, and that was not all. I mean, the United States offered also a guarantee that Israel would not be forced to accept the right of return, despite the fact that international law states explicitly that Palestinian refugees do have the right of return. President Bush acted much as Lord Balfour had 70 years before, 90 years before, when he essentially gave away Palestinian land as if it was his to give. The problem for Gazans is more complex, because even with the pullout of soldiers and settlers from the territory of Gaza, what was left behind was a significant level of control that we would still consider technically a kind of occupation. It's not traditional occupation where troops are on the ground, but it is no less than that. It is essentially a state of siege. Gaza is besieged, where Israel was in complete control of border crossings, of the land crossings, both into Egypt and into Israel, the seas surrounding Gaza were under and remain under Israeli control, the skies. Israel would determine whether or not planes could fly in or out of Gaza. So this is not freedom from occupation. This is simply a different form. Now, of course, we have the new Israeli-Palestinian agreement on the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt, which will allow, if it is allowed to work, some numbers of Palestinians to transit in and out of their prison, as it were, their prison of a large enlarged refugee camp, essentially, as Gaza has become, and that's important. But it also does not mean that Israelis are actually out of the picture. Israeli soldiers are not present at the Rafah crossing, but the European Union has over 70 monitors that are participating with the Palestinians in the border crossing between, remember, this is between Palestine and Egypt. So one might ask, well, why is Israel having anything to do with it? And the answer is, Palestine is not still, even Gaza, an independent sovereign country or independent sovereign territory. The way it's supposed to work is that real-time video footage will be fed to Israeli soldiers who are a few miles away. They will not be physically present at the border crossing, but they will have real-time access to the video, and they can raise questions or challenges through the European Union monitors to anyone that they don't want to enter or exit Gaza. Then that negotiation can go on for up to 6 hours. Now, ostensibly, by the letter of the law, the Palestinians are supposed to have the last say. The Palestinians are supposed to be able to make the final decision about whether or not somebody, even someone who has been challenged by Israel, is allowed to cross. And technically, that's true. The problem is what that ignores is the power relationship is such that the European Union monitors are authorized to shut down the entire border crossing if, in their view, the Palestinians are not acting according to their definition of international standards. What that means, of course, is that no Palestinian officials are going to risk antagonizing the Europeans. So if the Europeans even appear to agree with the Israeli view that a certain person should not be allowed to cross, it's very unlikely that the Palestinians will feel enough independence to protect that person's right to cross. So what they've done essentially is to outsource the control of the border from Israel to the European Union.
Which speaks ever more to the reasons of why organizing and participating in this International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. Phyllis Bennis, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a good day. Bye.
You too.
You are still listening to Under the Olive Tree. That was our Montreal collective member, Sabine Freisinger, interviewing Phyllis Bennis from Washington, D.C., regarding the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. We will listen now to a song by Mahmoud Qaboor, who is a Lebanese singer that sings for Palestinian liberation. And the song is called Unadikum, I Call Upon You. It is a poem by the famous Tawfiq Zayadi, Palestinian, the mayor of Nazareth and the president of the Communist Party in Israel until his death. So here we go in this beautiful tune, Unadikum, on this beautiful day.
أناديكم أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأطول أفديكم
وأهديكم ضياع عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم
وأهديكم ضياع عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم
فمأساتي التي أحيا نصيبي من مآسيكم
وأهديكم ضياع عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم
فمأساتي التي أحيا نصيبي من مآسيكم
أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأطول أفديكم أناديكم أشد على
أنا ما هنت في وطني ولا صغرت أكتافي
أنا ما هنت في وطني ولا صغرت أكتافي
وقفت بوجه ظلامي يتيما عاريا حافي
أنا ما هنت في وطني ولا صغرت أكتافي
وقفت بوجه ظلامي يتيما عاريا حافي
أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم
حملت دمي على كفي وما نكست أعلامي
حملت دمي على كفي وما نكست
وصنت العشب الأخضر فوق قبور أسلافي
حملت دمي على كفي وما ركست أعلامي
وصنت العشب الأخضر فوق قبور أسلافي
أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم أناديكم 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 أناديكم
That was Mahmoud Qaboor singing a poem for Tawfiq Zayadi, the late mayor of Nazareth and the late president of the Israeli Communist Party. Unadikum is a very important song in Palestinian popular culture because it is Palestine calling on the people to come and save it. Unadikum, I call upon you. Our next song is called Muntasib al-Qamati Amshi, Walking Tall, and it is performed by Marcel Khalifa. And the poem is by Mahmoud Darwish. Very beautiful song. One of the cornerstones of the resistance music in Palestine. Now we move on to the montage recorded in Concordia and UCAM by our Under the Olive Tree collectives in Montreal, Tanya Tabar, Sabine Friesinger, and Vivian Tabar. The recording happened on Tuesday as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People was being celebrated. Here we go to the montage.
Today there's a special day. Do you know what it is?
The International Solidarity Day for Palestinians.
Yes. So what do you think the importance is of International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinians?
Well, I believe it's very important, especially at the international level, since there is a lot of ignorance in the international level. The Palestinian issue had been mainly reserved within the Arab countries and Arab community living in the West, and that's the best opportunity to have an exposure and expose it to the Western society, who they lack a lot of knowledge to understand the Middle East conflict and what's going on in Palestine itself.
And how do you show your solidarity on this day?
Well, I came today to attend this event, and I tried to invite some Canadians to come, and I tried to talk about it with my friends, and hopefully maybe next year, if you guys can have pamphlets, I can help out in giving it out.
Thank you very much. What do you think the importance is of international solidarity for the Palestinians?
I think it's important because I think there's so many states, like the powerful states, are ignoring what's really happening there. And they're not really telling people, Western people, what is really going on. Like the mainstream media, they're like always bringing one side of the story. So I think it's important that we, like ordinary people like us, actually like do research, find out what's really happening, and try to make people see what's really happening. Regular people, the people that are only sumi, like to you know, mainstream media. So by doing a solidarity, actually you're like showing people that, you know, we're actually working for a cause, and that cause is the Palestinian cause, a cause that is not shown on mainstream media and that not a lot of people are ignoring, or that just don't have the right information to actually think about it.
And what are you doing today for your International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinians?
What I'm doing today, well, actually, I'm attending a conference made by Professor Sharoni, I think. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm just going to come and actually just hear what's her point of view of things. And, you know, like, she's an Israeli that is condemning what the Israelis are actually doing on the occupied territories. So,
thank you. What do you think the importance is of International Day of Solidarity for Palestinians?
Well, I think it's important for the world to know about what the Palestinians have gone through over the last 60 years, and the human rights violations that they face, and the oppression and that they face every day under an occupation. I think it's also important for the Palestinian people to know that there is a movement out there outside of Palestine that supports them, and there is a solidarity base that is pushing for a just end to the occupation. The solidarity factor is partly what what ended the apartheid regime. International support, international pressure is vital for any kind of progress to just solution.
And so how do you show your solidarity on this very important day?
Well, to me, this day, on a personal level, every day to me is International Solidarity Day with the Palestinian people. So on this day in particular, I might maybe think more about it, but to me, it's not just a one day, it's an everyday thing where to show my support to the Palestinian people.
Thanks.
Militant étudiant à l'UQAM, militant syndical à l'UQAM, militant solidaire des Palestiniens. Moi, je voudrais dire que la communauté palestinienne, c'est un exemple de courage, c'est un exemple de lutte. Tout le monde devrait s'inspirer d'une lutte acharnée qui dure maintenant depuis tellement d'années qu'on peut juste s'en inspirer et être solidaire, donc on est solidaire.
As a Palestinian, we just want to know what you think of International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinian people.
As a Palestinian, I think this is a crucial day, and I think it makes me think about just the basic and inalienable right of a person to express their belonging to their home, and the basic human aspiration that we all have to just realize and fulfill that basic right to realize and implement our right to belong to our home, to visit the place of the birth of our parents, and to live there if we choose to do so. And I hope that this international solidarity will help us as Palestinians to bring attention to that basic right.
And do you have any messages for our listeners?
I'd like to tell the listeners of Under the Olive Tree that for all of the members of the Palestinian community and all of the supporters of the Palestinian community, that we really value your support and your solidarity. We hope that you're standing with us today on this day. And to all of you that wish to silence or try to intimidate our voices, we're going to continue speaking up.
Why do you think the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people is important?
Well, I think it's important to let the people understand our cause as Palestinians, what they went through since 48 till today. And I think it's like any other important solidarity days in the world, like the United Nations have created. So it keeps the world remember the Palestinian and keep trying to solve this problem.
Je travaille avec le PAJU, Palestinien et Juif Uni, fondé par deux de mes confrères d'école, Bruce Katz et Rezek Farage. J'ai participé toute la journée à l'exposition de photos sur la Palestine, mais aussi conscientiser le monde sur les problèmes de la Palestine à partir du livre de M. Farage, La Palestine, le refus de disparaître, et aussi pour annoncer notre soirée de soutien au PAJU. La soirée, c'est le mercredi 7 décembre avec le film Intervention divine, l'amour d'un jeune Palestinien et d'une jeune Palestinienne dont la situation de la Palestine avec les checkpoints. Et c'est pour aider à financer le PAJU. La cause palestinienne, c'est un message de continuer d'espérer et qu'au bout de la ligne finira bien par paraître la paix, mais surtout la justice qui pourra faire amener la paix au peuple palestinien et aussi au peuple israélien.
International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinians?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to recognize the historical atrocities that have occurred to the Palestinians, but at the same time to look at ways that we can move forward and address those problems on an international level.
And what do you do usually on this day?
What do I do all my life?
No, on this on the day, on International Day of Solidarity, what do you usually do? How do you usually show your solidarity?
I try to go to some events that link to Palestinian people.
Thank you very much.
What do you think the importance of International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinian people is?
It's a very good question, Tanya. Thank you for asking. I think it is more for the benefit of people outside of Palestine than it is for those in Palestine. Because if you look at the situation right now, there's really not much happening on the Day of International Solidarity with the Palestinian people, for Palestinians. Nothing has changed. Nothing changed last year, the year before, etc., etc. So I think this is basically like lip service. And I'm doing my part because I feel like it's something. But it's been how many decades, you know? So I don't have a very optimistic view of this day or any day with respect to the Palestinian people, because they're still suffering, they're still in occupation, and it doesn't seem like it's going to change anytime soon.
André Lecor. Je travaille avec le PAJU, Palestiniens et Juifs Unis. Oui, bien sûr, j'ai toujours été partisan de la cause palestinienne, probablement parce que pendant la guerre de 39-45, je me suis engagé dans la résistance française pour libérer la France. Et j'ai connu ce que c'était qu'une occupation par une puissance étrangère. Et pour moi, il y a une similitude. Malheureusement, on comprend mal comment les Juifs d'Israël peuvent faire subir à leur tour à un autre peuple ce qu'ils ont subi eux-mêmes. Mais pour moi, il y a une similitude. Et de même que je me suis engagée pour me battre contre les Allemands, je suis aussi engagée pour la libération de la Palestine, pacifiquement cette fois-ci.
What is the importance of International Day of Solidarity for the Palestinians?
Well, it's probably one of the more important days for Palestinians, simply because it recognizes our right to exist on our own country, to end the occupation that's been going on for almost 40 years now, and essentially to provide freedom and justice for the Palestinian people.
So are there any special ceremonies or traditions that you usually do on this day? Or?
Well, maybe not on a personal level, because if I would, then I'd be mourning. But if anything, essentially, usually demonstrations, awareness campaigns, bringing in a speaker, basically to raise awareness amongst the local community about our struggle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
were the voices from the hallways in Concordia and UCAM commemorating the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People. Again, the exhibition, this is their last day. It's called Twice Removed. It's happening at J.A. Desev Auditorium. The address is 320 St. Catherine East, Metro Barrio Cam, and that's in University of Quebec at Montreal. And it's going to go on today, the last day, till 5 o'clock. And for the demonstration, again, we repeat, it's happening now. Go ahead and join them. It is happening on the corner of Peel and San Antoine at the address of 715 Peel in front of the Citizenship and Immigration Canada. I will leave you with one last tune. It is performed by Sabrine, a Palestinian group that has been playing music since 1980. Sabrine is not only a musical group. What they do is they take poetry, famous poetry, and turn it into songs, and at the same time manufacture Arabic music instruments and provide them to children and give classes to children for free. The song is called About the Human Being, and it is a poem by Mahmoud Darwish that has been adopted. This human being was tied and was told that he is a killer, a thief, a refugee. We listen to Sabrine and the words of Mahmoud Darwish. Until we meet again under the olive tree, may you awaken to a homeland, free Palestine.
السلاسل ربطوا يديه في صخرة الموتى وقالوا أنت قاتل أخذوا طعامه والملابس والبيارق ورموه في زنزانة الموتى وقالوا أنت سارق أخذوه من كل المرافق أخذوا حبيبته الصغيرة وقالوا أنت لاجئ ربطوا يديه في صخرة الموتى وقالوا أنت قاتل أخذوا طعامه والملابس والبيارق ورموه في زنزانة الموتى وقالوا أنت سارق طردوه من كل المرافق أخذوا حبيبته الصغيرة وقالوا أنت لاجئ العينين والكفين إن الليل زائل لغرفتك توقيف باقية ولا زرد السلاسل يدامي العينين والكفين إن الليل زائل لغرفتك توقيف باقية ولا زرد السلاسل نيرون مات ولم تمت روما نيرون مات ولم تمت روما بعينيها تقاتل بعينيها تقاتل بعينيها تقاتل سنبلة تموت ستملأ الوادي سنابل ستملأ الوادي سنابل ستملأ الوادي سنابل ستملأ الوادي سنابل وحبوب